It's time for the Sandler Training Hour on News Talk 670 KBOI. Here's your host, Jim Stevens.
And welcome to the weekend. I'm your host, Jim Stevens. This is the Sandler Training Hour. I bring you talent each weekend from all over the world, Sandler trainers and experts in everything related to employee development, management, sales, customer service. Today I'm honored to have my friend Darby Frizikis, who is with the Divine Group. Darby has a background as a Sandler trainer, and she has moved into the field of assessments, which is really, I'm probably saying this wrong, Darby, but I think it's the crystal ball that helps you understand how people think, what are their hidden roadblocks, and more importantly, before you hire them, what are you really getting? So welcome to the program, Darby.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Jim.
I think people have maybe a bit of skepticism around assessments. There are times when we use these a lot for hiring, and there are times when we say to someone, now our next step is taking an assessment. You can hear their red flags going up. Give our listeners an overview of these assessments and how do they work.
It's interesting that you should bring up hiring, because I was just speaking with one of our clients about hiring and assessments and the power of using them early on in the hiring process. And I think the reason why people are so hesitant to take assessment is because they know that an assessment is going to tell you something that I may not want to tell you. So it's not just telling you what my strengths are, but it might also share with you what my weaknesses are. And so years ago, when I first entered Salesforce development and I helped companies hire salespeople, it just made me wonder why somebody would interview for a job, lie about what they plan to do in the job, what they could do, what they wanted to do, and set themselves up for failure. That just didn't make a lot of sense to me. So over the years, what I've seen is that a person shows up on an interview and they want to be the person that can travel 50% of the time, and they want to be the person that can make 40 cold calls a day. It's not that they are lying. They just don't understand maybe their limitations, or maybe they're just not giving any mental recognition, because again, they want to be that person. But as time goes on and they are in that job, the real them starts to show, because you can only be someone else for so long. So back to your question, why people hesitate, I believe we have enough information on, and we call it people analytics. That's the buzzword right now. So we have enough information on people analytics that companies understand it's not voodoo, and they rely on this information now. So it can't be dismissed. Years ago, when only a few companies were using assessments, could be easily dismissed, like, oh, that's not a best practice. Well, most of the companies do it now. And so there's little hesitation there.
Yeah.
I will tell you that as you're using it through the entire employee life cycle, and that's really what we like to see companies do, use it for hiring and onboarding and development and team building and succession planning and separation. If they use this objective information throughout the employee life cycle, it really, really help improve the productivity and a lot of times the happiness of an employee.
It really does let you benchmark what are your natural skills, natural areas that you fall short, so that if you're working on them, you can definitely see improvement. I know many of my clients use the Divine Group tools as a means by doing employee reviews. Let's back up a little bit. You talk about people analytics. So Darby, tell our listeners just some of the background of the Divine Group, how you all got started, how long have you been in business, that type of thing.
Okay, so Divine Group began about 50 years ago with Dr. Donald Divine, and he, just a brilliant man, had a PhD and an incredible desire to understand people, and he worked mostly in HR. So over the years, he ended up developing the Divine Inventory Assessment, and it was a paper and pencil assessment. And then, of course, online came, I'm going to say, around 2000, when things became more and more online.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, it started out as an instrument that you really needed a PhD to understand the results. And over the years, more and more companies were using assessments, and more folks needed to understand how to read the results. Instead of having constructs, he transitioned an entire suite of talent management products. And what I mean by that is some products are psychometric instruments, and they're going to tell an employer how well suited someone is for a job behaviorally. Then we have other solutions that are cognitive tests. Some might be a basic math and reading. Others are critical thinking, and those we use for executives and folks that have to take in very complex information, understand it, and be able to make business decisions based on that. So not every job requires high critical thinking, but if it does, it's nice to know that we can measure that. We also have engagement surveys and exit interviews. And so, again, years ago, it was enough to know just some basics about a person, but now this has become a best practice in most companies globally, and companies are looking for a way to get objective information to add to the subjective information that they have on their folks. And that's actually a very important point. Assessments are not made to completely replace everything else that goes on in an interview or a performance review. It's part of it. It gives you objective measurement. It doesn't tell you the whole story.
Like you said earlier, it is one of the tools that you can use to help really uncover a part of someone that you wouldn't otherwise see. I use the analogy of a telescope. If you look through a telescope at something, there's no three-dimensional view. You can't see depth. When you use a binocular, you actually can see that depth of field. And I think, like you said, people don't intentionally mislead. They're just optimistic. We judge other people by their results, and we judge ourselves by our intention. So when I'm filling out that application, I'm thinking about my intention. I'm not thinking about my execution. And what I have really appreciated about the Divine Hiring suite of tools is it can help us understand what is going to be the natural propensity of someone once they are in that position. I know you and your team work on hiring. Sandler tends to gravitate towards sales and management, but that's not the only hiring tools that you have. Tell the listeners all of the tools for hiring purposes.
When it comes to hiring, we have tools that can help companies anywhere from hourly, be an hourly security guard, an hourly retail person, could be somebody who's working hourly in food service, all the way up through the C-suite. So we probably have a library of 100 different job positions. Then there's also the opportunity to customize. Sometimes there are companies that have very, very specific jobs. We had one that was a livestock handler, and that was just not one we had in the library. So we had to create a specific job model for that function. There are also sometimes based on an industry, it might be a sales position, but it kept some very unique qualities to it. And so oftentimes we'll do some customization with that as well. There really isn't a job that we couldn't have an assessment for. And Jim, I think that's probably one of the most important things to point out again. When a company wants to assess, they have to decide what information do I want to know about this person? And the best example I can give on that is you wouldn't give your employees a pregnancy test to find out if they're doing drugs. So you're not going to give a behavioral test to find out how smart someone is or if they can do complex math.
Right.
On the front end, it's important to set the right expectation and find out what is the wish list. What are the things that you're trying to find out about your employee, whether it's hiring or development? Is it communication style, personality?
Right.
What do you need to know?
Yeah, and I can testify to the ability to customize this tool. Probably a story you don't want to hear because it's how your clients may use your program in ways it wasn't intended. But I had a client I was coaching, and he had been through 3 failed marriages and was dating. And he didn't want to make the same mistake again. And he said, you know, that tool works so good for hiring. Do you think it would work for dating? And I said, well, let's give it a shot. So we took the template. We went through the 33 behaviors and we benchmarked what would be ideal for him. And then if he got serious with a girl, he had her
take the assessment.
I can say that he did get married. That was probably 10 years ago and is still happily married.
Isn't that a nice success story?
That's hilarious, isn't it?
I will then admit to you and whoever's listening that I did assess the gentleman that I've been dating for almost 5 years. And although I hadn't intended to use it as a qualifier slash disqualifier, because I'm an expert with these particular assessments, it helped me to really understand him
on a
very
deeper
quickly.
Level.
Very, very quickly. Yeah. Yes. And understand that he's high in conflict management and high in assertiveness and high in empathy, which is a very interesting combination.
Yeah, that's different.
And, but again, it helps whether it's dating or hiring, or when you have a manager that comes in to an organization that's already established and he or she can assess their team, really helps them understand the people and the dynamics and what they need to do to help that team be highly productive, how to interact with their folks. I mean, it's just really some great information.
We're going to go to a break, Darby. When we get back, I'm going to ask you to tell the listeners a little bit about the reports that are developed for a group. We use them when we bring on board a new client to help us quantify and define their culture within the organization regarding sales and management. Give your contact information in case somebody listening would like to reach out to you.
Sure. I can be reached at Darby, and that's D-A-R-B-Y, at divinegroup.com. And that is the Irish Divine, D-E-V-I-N-E, group.com.
Awesome. We'll be back with more of the Sandler Training Hour just after this. Hi, this is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. Business leaders today know the largest business expense is often labor. However, most leaders fail to see the greatest labor expense is employee turnover as a result of a poor hiring decision. We have a 2-hour workshop on Tuesday, March 24th from 2 o'clock p.m. to 4 o'clock p.m. on how to hire and grow your dream team. In this workshop, you will discover strategies to identify and hire the best candidate, benchmark the ideal traits for the position, assure a cultural fit with your company's core value, and harness leading indicators to make sure that you get the results you expect in the first 90 days. Enhance your hiring skills. Invest $89.95 to attend on Tuesday, March 21st, 2 o'clock p.m. to 4 o'clock p.m. at the Sandler Training Center, 704 East Heritage Court, Meridian, Idaho. Register at crossroads.sandler.com or call us at 208-429-9275. Crossroads.sandler.com or 208-429-9275. And welcome to Behind the Business. I'm your host, Jim Stevens. This segment of our program, we feature local and regional entrepreneurs who share with us some of their insights and help us see behind the surface of a business. And my guest today is John Davis, who's the owner of Dowdy's Automotive. John actually owns multiple businesses. His great passion is Dowdy's. They have 3 locations, one in Meridian, one in Boise, and one in Ontario. John, let's talk a little bit about you acquired Dowdy's when they had one brand.
Yep.
And then you've expanded and planted 2 more branches.
Correct, Jim, through a mix of acquisition and de novo startup.
And de novo startup means?
Just we built a building out in the middle of an empty lot and hung our sign up, went
to
work.
And so talk to us about the model that allows you to make those decisions. I mean, really understanding your finances. When am I ready to start that second branch?
Any business has a financial model associated with it. Automotive repair is no different. If you were to look at the average automotive shop out there in the country, it makes about a 5% EBIT, earnings before interest taxes. You need to make 12 to 15% in most service businesses in order to accumulate capital and expand.
Mm-hmm.
So 5% isn't going to get the job done. And you also have to do it at a price point that's fair for the community.
You've got to stay competitive.
Yep, prices you well against your competition. So you better know your numbers. Now, in our business, there's a very specific model, and we track it daily. We know our P&L in each of those stores. We know our cost of goods sold. We know what the labor component is, the part component. We have benchmarks for every general ledger item on our P&L. And if we get out of whack, we work real hard to bring those back into.
And so is the branch manager the one who's looking at those numbers on a daily basis?
We have a regional manager that manages the 3 stores and then a general manager in each store. And then you've got the owner, and we look at those every evening.
Oh, really? Every evening?
Every evening.
You sit down with your general manager? Or?
No, we have a shared computer system via Microsoft Cloud.
So you guys are all online together? You're all looking at the numbers together?
Yep. And if they don't report in the next morning, they're going to get a phone call. Where's your numbers at?
Good. So, awesome. Yeah. Awesome. And so I'm guessing that helps on a couple of bases. One is it helps you manage the numbers, but I'm sure it also trickles down and helps your clients because it keeps your service sharp and it keeps your pencil sharp.
It does. And most businesses, and I don't think ours is any exception, are all, as you've heard, businesses of nickels and dimes. And if you lose it on the nickels and dimes, I can assure you the dollars won't follow.
Mm.
So you better pay attention to the little things on your P&L. And if you don't, pretty soon you'll find out everything's out of control on your P&L.
Give your contact information in case somebody'd like to reach out to you and tell us where those branch offices are.
Be happy to do so. Dowdy's Automotive is DOWDYSAUTO.com. That's on the web. Or you can call our stores at 342-3651, located on Federal Way at Broadway in Southeast Boise, Meridian just south of Overland, Ontario, Oregon on 4th Avenue.
John Davis will be back with a little more of John just after this next segment of the Sandler Training Hour. And welcome back to the second installment of the Sandler Training Hour. I'm your host, Jim Stevens. My guest today is Darby Frazekas. She's with the Divine Group, resource that we use in helping our clients take the temperature of their current team so that we can understand their culture and then work to create the culture desired. Darby, share with our listeners about the group assessment and how you're able to take an individual's assessment and couple multiples of those together to take a snapshot of the culture of a company.
Sure. Sometimes a manager, let's say that it's a brand new manager, they're coming into a position and they don't really know these folks. And they may want to find out some information on how these people fit together as a team and some of the basic competencies that that particular area of business is responsible for. They could have each individual take an assessment under their particular role, whether it's admin or professional services or sales. They could then roll it up into a team report that could tell them several different things. Or maybe they don't want to have a report that has names on it. They just, as you're saying, they just want to know what's the culture, what am I getting with this group here? And that's something that they could sit down and present to their team. And that would be our culture report. It talks about competencies and behaviors, mm-hmm. but it doesn't call out any individuals. On the other side, they may want to be able to study their people in a team format, and they may want to look at something that shows them names and competencies. It really depends on what is the information that you are looking for, what do you want to get. They really need to ask you the questions of what are you trying to uncover and what are you going to use this for. If you are interviewing, if you're hiring for a position, then you should be looking at a resume and you should be looking at the assessment and maybe you have some knockout questions as well. There are some companies that they want the magic bullet. Just give me something that I can give to people, and if it tells me hire them, I'm going to hire them. There just isn't something like that.
That's true.
The Divine Inventory, so this is a specific tool that we're talking about, and specifically the Divine Inventory can be used at any point in the employee life cycle. It shouldn't be something that you do once and then stick in a drawer. You use it hiring, onboarding, development, succession planning, and the Divine Inventory is formulated with 33 core human behaviors. And those behaviors are things like planning, learning, emotional composure, listening, goal orientation, vitality. Those are the ingredients that every single person who takes the Divine Inventory is assessed on. And then, based on your role, those ingredients are put together in different formulations, and that's what makes up a competency. For example, a sales person is evaluated on the same 33 core human behaviors, but then when you look at the output, it not only has those 33 behaviors, it also has competencies like sales prospecting and control and close. And if it was a nurse, she would take the same 33 behaviors, but then maybe she has things like caring and customer relationship. But if you had a nurse, her competencies are going to be vastly different than somebody who's in sales. When you're looking at these competencies, you think about competencies as muscles. Just kind of make the analogy that competencies and behaviors are muscles. If you have a muscle that is overworked, it's going to be exhausted. So in behavioral competency terms, that's going to compress the score. That's going to give you a lower score. If you are overworked in a certain area, if you haven't used that muscle, your muscle will atrophy. For example, if the competency is problem solving, and that's not really something I do in my daily work, my score could be low because it's an atrophied muscle. So when you're looking at these competencies, it's not a one-stop shop. It's directionally correct. It's going to give you an indication if somebody is going to be able to do the job, and it's also going to tell the manager how much work they have to put into the person's success. But keep in mind that some of these competency scores and behavior scores are hardwired.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are more situational. Most often, it's a combination of those two things. So let me give you an example of accept responsibility or self-responsibility that might be low. But it's low because I've been in a bad environment. If you're a sales manager, and let's say that your compensation and your bonus relies completely on what your salespeople sell, but your salespeople are underperforming. Unfortunately, you're not allowed to fire them. You're not allowed to hire better ones. You can't put them on a performance improvement program. So you have this responsibility without really having the authority. Let's say that that was the only thing that was really, really bothering you about somebody's scores, somebody's assessment results, and you brought them in for an interview. You want to ask them some questions about the situation they're in right now to see, did they have responsibility without authority? And then what about the last job they had? And what about other situations where they're in leadership positions, maybe in their church or in their community? So you're looking for them to make excuses and that nothing's ever their fault, or is it just a situation that they might be in?
Their environment leaves them powerless.
Yes, yes. But now I will also say, if you see a lot of compressed scores, that could be that they're in a really awful environment. But again, you have to think, how much effort do I have to invest in this person to get them to
up
where
to
they're going to not be exhausted anymore or not be atrophied anymore? And that's where the person who's hiring them has to have a realistic view of what they're capable of.
Right. That's a great point. Will I be able to manage this person? So let's talk about a couple of other special cases. Like, for example, I had somebody the other day who has a very high schedule orientation and a very low time competency. Time competency is really how efficiently I use my time. Schedule orientation, is that how rigidly I manage it?
Yes. And so what I would expect, somebody who has low time competency may feel like a particular task is going to take an hour and it takes 3 hours. I would expect someone who is low in time competency, meaning their concept of how long something takes to get done, and is very rigid in their schedule orientation, they have a very closely packed schedule, that they're running late a lot, maybe canceling meetings a lot. And if that person's in management, they are going to frustrate the people who work for them, because typically managers, the first thing that they will cancel is internal meetings.
A good point. Time competency really is a measurement of how well you're able to evaluate the length of time something will take. What's schedule orientation?
Schedule orientation is how I manage my schedule. So if I have a low schedule orientation, if I'm a 0, 1, or 2, because these are on scale of 0 to 9, if I'm really low in schedule orientation, I don't like to put something on my calendar. Mm. I hesitate to schedule more stuff.
I wing it.
And if I'm really high in schedule orientation, 8s and 9s, then every half an hour is booked, depending on what I do for a living.
If I'm looking for a combination that results in someone being very urgent and strategic and efficient, I'm going to look for things like assertiveness, structure, intensity. What are some of the things that go into the quality of urgency?
Urgency, I would say initiative and closure and assertiveness, possibly even vitality in there. Assertiveness has to do with somebody's comfort in making a decision. If you have a lot of possibilities, but you're very wishy-washy, you're not going to execute. So you need something that gets you to execute. Vitality is going to be your, not just the physical energy, but also your passion towards something. Initiative is more or less, when someone's low in initiative, you kind of have have to push start them to get them going in the right direction. So it's just how we define closure. Closure is not closing sales. Closure has more to do with project. And someone who's low in closure is sort of backpedaling. They're slowing their speed down. Someone who's high in closure wants to get something done, get it off their desk.
Mm.
Sometimes there are some positions where getting something done very quickly is the most important thing. Think of a trauma room.
Right.
You know, you don't want somebody thinking about how they're going to do something. They're saving lives.
Right.
But then you have other situations where you want someone to slow down, and it's a very methodical thing, and I think more like non-trauma brain surgery. That might be at a slower pace.
So what's the difference between closure and task completion?
Oh, that is an excellent question. Closure is more project-oriented, and so it involves others. Mm. Task completion is me completing a task by myself.
Give your contact information, Darby, in case somebody's listening would like to reach out to you.
Sure. I can be reached by email at darby@divinegroup.com, D-A-R-B-Y, at D-E-V-I-N-E group.com.
And we'll be back with a little more of Darby and the Sandler Training Hour in our last segment of the program. Next, we're moving into Entrepreneur Radio, where we get to interview local and regional entrepreneurs, hear their stories, and learn from their successes. I'm Jim Stevens, available at 208-429-9275 or on the web at crossroads.sandler.com. We'll be back just after this. Hi, this is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. Business leaders today know the largest business expense is often labor. However, most leaders fail to see the greatest labor expense is employee turnover as a result of a poor hiring decision. We have a two-hour workshop on Tuesday, March 24th from 2 o'clock p.m. to 4 o'clock p.m. on how to hire and grow your dream team. In this workshop, you will discover strategies to identify and hire the best candidate, benchmark the ideal traits for the position, assure a cultural fit with your company's core value, and harness leading indicators to make sure that you get the results you expect in the first 90 days. Enhance your hiring skills. Invest $89.95 to attend on Tuesday, March 21st, 2 o'clock p.m. to 4 o'clock p.m. at the Sandler Training Center, 704 East Heritage Court, Meridian, Idaho. Register at crossroads.sandler.com or call us at 208-429-9275. Crossroads.sandler.com or 208-429-9275. And welcome back to Behind the Business. In this segment of our program, we talk to local and regional business owners. John Davis, his background is in financial management.
Correct.
Is that right?
That's correct.
And
yep.
So give us a little thumbnail shot of your background.
Before I stepped into the fast-paced automotive service business, and I do own multiple businesses, but I was a senior vice president at a large Midwest-based bank in the trust and investment management division. So I've always had that large corporate and financial background. My educational background is in economics and then Pacific Coast Banking School here in Seattle.
And I'm guessing that part of that background is what helped you realize the thing that's going to give you a competitive edge in the marketplace is customer service.
I think that customer service is something that not a lot of businesses teach. It's something that's always gotten through on-the-job training.
Yeah.
And in our case, we believe strongly that it better be something that you build an operational model around. Simple OJT is not enough to get the job done.
Right, right. Shameless plug for what we do. We have a program called Strategic Customer Care, which is designed to help train the fundamentals of really being a great communicator, because good customer care is about communicating the way your clients want you to communicate with them. You have two mantras that really help put things in the perspective of what does the client want. Share that with our listeners.
You bet. Our model, and it's not unique to us, we stole it from somebody else, is speed of service and yes-based operational methodologies. And very simply, speed of service says that you don't want your car down for a long time. We want to get it turned around in a day or two tops, even for the most complex services. The other is we always want to say yes to you. You know, Jim, you've got a busy schedule. If your car breaks down, you don't want somebody to say, no, we can't get it in until Thursday or next week. Our backstage problems are not your problem, and they shouldn't be your problem. We build around speed of service and yes. And then the other piece of that is that you need to give your manager's span of authority and control to operate within that environment. You know, it's one thing to say it. It's another to say, okay, Mr. Service Manager or General Manager, if you've got to spend $500 or $1,000 to make a customer happy, you don't need to call me. In fact, it's a failure if you call me.
Yeah.
You really have to think about your training, your policies, how you're going to measure and inspect what you expect. It's all critical.
Make sure there's empowerment there.
Yep.
Part of speed of service and part of yes is really finding out what the client's convenience. How do you deal with things like, I don't have a ride, or could you come pick up my car?
All of those things are operational challenges that come up in about 5% of the things you're dealing with. And in this day and age, we're so lucky. We've got Uber.
Right.
There'll be an Uber driver there in about 3 to 5 minutes take you where you need to go.
Right.
You need a rental car for a few days, Enterprise would be happy to come get
They'll pick you up.
Yeah, but let us arrange that stuff for you. You're getting enough of a shock to your system because whatever failed on your daily ride, let us handle the details for you.
Give your contact information, John, and let us know where those branch offices are so our listeners can stop in and say hello.
Well, thank you. We're all over the valley. Federal Way at Broadway in Southeast Boise, Meridian. We're just south of Overland in the Southern Springs Center next to the new Starbucks, and out in Ontario, Oregon on Southwest 4th Avenue. You can Google us, Dowdy's Auto, DowdysAuto.com.
And we're going to be back with the final segment of Behind the Business and John Davis. Next segment is Entrepreneur Radio, where we get to hear the story of some local and regional entrepreneurs. We'll be back just after this. And welcome to Entrepreneur Radio. This segment of our program, we get to meet local and regional entrepreneurs, hear their story about what they're doing to create a dynamic business. If you are a networker in any way, shape, or form, you have benefited from my guest's efforts in the Valley. Today I have with me as a guest Jeremy Miller. He's the owner of the local franchise for BNI. Jeremy, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Tell the listeners, in case there's somebody that has no idea what BNI is. What's the concept behind your business?
BNI actually stands for Business Network International, and really it was formed out of California by Dr. Ivan Meisner, and it was formed during a downtime in his business, and he was looking for a way to get out and promote his business and grow. And it really just started out as a lunch with a bunch of his friends and business owners, and from that lunch, BNI was kind of formed. And what they are is it's basically a leads group. I like to call it, it's not your granddad's leads group. It's definitely a lot different than maybe a typical leads group that people think about. But the whole concept is giver's gain. We're based on the giver's gain philosophy, so it's business owners, business people from all different walks of the business world that get together once a week and exchange ideas for business. How can we help each other grow business and be better at business?
And do you function with chapters? Is that how your business model here in the Valley works?
Exactly. Explain so that. Right now we have about 19 chapters that I oversee in Idaho, and each chapter meets on a weekly basis. Each chapter has one member per profession, so you're only going to have one realtor, or one banker, one financial planner in each of these chapters, and to eliminate any competition that you can get from having multiple people in professions. So with one member per profession, and again, we meet, we talk about what a great referral for everybody would be, and then it's kind of up to everybody else to go out and hopefully help find them.
And how long does a meeting typically last?
It's an hour and a half meeting, and it's an hour and a half whether there's 15 people in the room or whether there's 60 people in the room. We make sure we get it done in an hour and a half.
So if I attended a BNI meeting, is there training, teaching, or is it just each person sharing about their business?
You know, actually, that's where we really set ourselves apart, I think, from some of the other leads groups that are out there, is we actually do quite a bit of training.
Hmm.
We are working with our members on how to construct the best elevator pitch that you can, your best 60-second commercial, how to make those more effective so that you're actually training people, not just selling people. And then we do other trainings as well on how to give an effective 10-minute presentation. We know, everybody knows, that the fear of speaking is huge.
Right.
through society. And this is a great place for those business owners that maybe don't get out and have the opportunity to network. It's a great place where they can go and they can risk and they can just get better at it. Networking is something that you can actually get better at. It can be taught.
Right. So it's if I plug in, I'm plugging into a specific chapter and that becomes my home base.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And again, have our members find the chapter that they feel the most comfortable in. And I think that's the biggest thing. One of the questions I get asked all the time is, what chapter should I belong to? to? And my answer is always, you got to go out and you have to find somewhere that you're comfortable, that you're going to feel like everybody else in the room. You start there, but then you can, and you do have the opportunity to go visit the other chapters throughout the valley as well.
So, Jeremy, what got you involved in this?
I was running sporting goods stores for a long time in the old Sunset Sports here that was here. As I continued to age and get older, I decided that I'm definitely going to need a grown-up job, and I went into the insurance business, and because I grew up in the insurance business in McCall with my parents. And going from a retail store where people were coming in to buy stuff to all of a sudden now going out and trying to have to promote and sell myself was it's a huge change.
Right.
And so I was lucky enough, my very best friend in the world introduced me to B&I, and from that very first meeting, here I am 20 years later and still involved in it.
Wow. 20 years later, you've been involved. So you were the pioneer that started it here in the Valley?
I wasn't necessarily the pioneer, but I was definitely part of the first group. B&I came in about, like they say, about 20 years ago. Yeah, I was one of the members that joined when it very first got here. And for the 20 years, we've seen a lot of ups and downs and growth, but I stuck with it and was lucky enough to be able to buy the franchise rights about 12 years ago. So
awesome.
I've been the executive director ever since.
Well, 19 chapters seems like a lot. Is that exceptional for this demographics here?
You know, the way B&I formulates their plan as far as growth is a chapter for every 35,000 people. We're doing well in this. We're still growing. I actually just had two meetings with other people that want to start chapters because they can't get into an existing B&I chapter. So
because they're in a competitive market.
Because they're in a competitive market. Yep. Yep. And people don't leave. So you get involved. It's very rarely do people leave. So one of the other options is to start new chapters. So we're actually starting two new chapters now, and then I've got two more that are kind of in that beginning growth stages. So you'll see probably 25, 26 chapters here in the next 4 or 5 months.
And what's the typical headcount? How many members in each chapter?
Our average chapter size right now is 20, and it's something that we are continually trying to grow. We'd love to see that average chapter size bump up to about 24, 25 people. A lot of people were out there networking with.
Yeah, right? That's a lot of clients. So how does the business work? Is there a fee that the clients pay per month? Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so to join B&I, there's a registration fee and then there's a membership fee. You pay for a year or 2 years at a time. Those prices are actually set by B&I International, so it's not something that I necessarily have any control over. So yeah, you pay the fee to join the B&I chapter, a particular chapter that you want, and then each chapter, kind of depending on where they meet, what time they meet, may have a lunch fee or a meeting fee of some sort that goes directly to the chapter. So that's
and
that
do
works.
You do you manage the finances of the chapter, or
I do not
manage
it. No. Yeah. No, the chapter, I manage all the B&I related finances. Each chapter is responsible to handle their weekly dues or monthly dues.
So what advantages have you seen in being a franchise? Is it helpful for you?
You know, if you would have told me 15 years ago that I was going to be a franchise owner, I would have said no, not going to happen.
Right.
You know, it's just one of those things that kind of fell into my lap. And the time that I had the opportunity to buy the franchise rights was kind of a tipping point with B&I. It was either really going to take off or it was going to maybe fail.
Tank.
And so I stepped up with the help of some really great friends and was able to buy the franchise rights, and extremely glad I did, because again, here I am 12 years later and we continue to grow, and I continue to see this form of networking really make a difference in a lot of people's lives.
That's awesome. What would you say, Jeremy, is the biggest pitfall people get into in a networking group? Because I think sometimes it gets a little stale, or I've been involved in some where the leads were not very good leads. You could get it out of the newspaper.
Yeah. The biggest pitfall in anything is complacency. And when you get complacent with those around you or even in your own world, whether it be personal or business, you're asking for trouble. So one of the things we do, because again, we do meet on a weekly basis. You're meeting with the same people week in and week out and can get a little bit stagnant. But we are always trying to find different ways to help, different ways to grow. Again, I've been doing this for 20 years and I still am learning how to be a more effective networker. So it's about it's about sharing those experiences and stories, just making people understand that, guess what? Life is going to be stagnant sometimes. And how you deal and how you come through those times really is going to kind of help define the successes that you have.
So you're meeting with your chapter every single week. week?
Every week.
Wow.
Yep.
Big time commitment. Do people resist that?
There are. There definitely are people that resist it, and it's one of the things that people do resist and don't take part of. But our philosophy is the quicker, the better you can get to know people and truly understand and trust the people that are around you, the more likely it is that you're going to share business with them or pass referrals. Speaking is one of the greatest fears that people can have, but also giving a referral is actually proven to be something that people really worry about, because what happens with that referral is going to be a reflection on them. So if something goes bad in that transaction, you can lose a friend over it.
Right.
So, I don't want to be blamed.
Knowing how to make a referral.
Knowing how, and we're not about passing referrals. That's at the end of the day, we do want to pass business, but our goal in our meeting, we're not there to sell each other. We're not there to sell products to one another in the room. We're there to help educate people in the room about what a great referral is for us so that they can go out and help us find it. So education is so much more important than selling when it comes to networking.
What's the investment required to be a member?
To be a member right now, it's $150 for the registration fee, and that costs $445 for a year membership, $685 for a two-year membership. So that gets you your one-year your membership.
That seems like a bargain.
We track our numbers. So one of the things that we do is we track the numbers, and we track the amount of referrals we pass, and we also track the amount of money that's generated from those referrals. And this last year, we passed over $6.3 million worth of business.
Wow.
And so their average seat value this last year was well over, is pushing $14,000,
$15,000. And you're getting it for $500.
You're getting it for $500, $600. We definitely want to help people grow business, and this has proven to be able to do it.
Jeremy Miller. Give your contact information in case somebody'd like to reach out to you, Jeremy.
So, yeah, it's Jeremy Miller, and you can find me at www.bni-idaho.com. Give my contact information. It's jeremy@bni-idaho for my email address, or you can call me, 208-724-0601, and we'd love to have you come visit.
So it's okay to come just audit a session?
We encourage visitors. We have visitors at almost all of our meetings every week. Yeah, it's just a great way to introduce yourself to a variety of different people. We'd love to have visitors come in and take part.
All right. So we hope you get some listeners calling in and meeting with Jeremy, finding a group that you don't have a competitor in, and you're able to make some connections. Jeremy, thanks for being on the program. We're going to be back with the next segment of the Sandler Training Hour just after this. Hi, this is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. Business leaders today know the largest business expense is often labor. However, most leaders fail to see the greatest labor expense is employee turnover as a result of a poor hiring decision. We have a two-hour workshop on Tuesday, March 24th from 2 o'clock p.m. to 4 o'clock p.m. on how to hire and grow your dream team. In this workshop, you will discover strategies to identify and hire the best candidate, benchmark the ideal traits for the position, assure a cultural fit with your company's core value, and harness leading indicators to make sure that you get the results you expect in the first 90 days. Enhance your hiring skills. Invest $89.95 to attend on Tuesday, March 21st, 2 o'clock p.m. to 4 o'clock p.m. at the Sandler Training Center, 704 East Heritage Court, Meridian, Idaho. Register at crossroads.sandler.com or call us at 208-429-9275. Crossroads.sandler.com or 208-429-9275. And welcome to Behind the Business, where we get to meet the people and hear the story behind some regional and local businesses. John Davis is the owner of Dowdy's Automotive, 3 branch offices in the Treasure Valley area. John, we've been talking about how do I manage a business? How do I make sure I have the best of class customer service? And I think both of those things depend on having the right people. So what kind of staffing model do you recommend?
In 3 minutes, here's a couple of pieces of advice I would give on staffing. If you have the wrong staff, fix it tomorrow. It's terrible to let people go, but they need to get on with their life, and your business needs to get on with its life. Back to this everything I needed to know I learned in kindergarten. You know a bad staff hire when you've made it.
Yeah.
Fix it.
Yeah.
Fix it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Aside from that, you need people that are enthusiastic, that smile over the phone or in person, that come to work enthusiastic and excited about what they're doing, and most importantly of all, are honest and willing to acknowledge their mistakes. Now, a lot of that goes into the environment you create. You need employees that will be honest with you and your customers every day of the week.
Yeah.
If you've got somebody who you know isn't the best representation for your company, there's this emotional attachment that most of us have. We don't want to let someone go. How do you get the courage to pull the trigger?
I don't know. That comes over time. I've been in corporate management, my own business now for many, many years. It was very difficult the first time. But I'll tell you, there's an old thing that I learned, that if you're going to bed worrying about an employee, and if you wake up in the morning worrying about an employee, that's the wrong employee. Act on it.
And then I think part of the reason we don't act on it is, how am I going to replace this person? So what are some suggestions on building a bench of talent behind your business?
You better always be recruiting. If you've got more than 5 or 6 employees in your business, I always plan on somebody's going to wake up and be ready to leave, you know, sometime this year. So you better always have an ad out there. You better be active in your community service clubs and other things so that you get to know people, whether that's the Chamber, the Rotary, the Kiwanis. You need to have a referral network that you can turn to when it's time to hire somebody. The best people aren't looking at Craigslist ad. The best people are the people that you're going to get referred to you for the job.
And I think one big challenge that I'm guessing you face us, and that is that there's not as many people growing up in the trades anymore.
That's correct.
So how do you nurture that type of a person?
Really tough. This little 3-store business in Boise, Idaho goes to California, Arizona, Wyoming. We chase the technical schools. We're always having job postings with their career counseling department. We're doing job fairs. We'll be doing one in Rancho Cucamonga in the spring to find technicians. The local schools, we serve on the advisory committee at CWI's automotive tech program. So if you're in an industry that has those types of resources available, get involved, be involved. It's like advertising. You want a potential hire to think of you when they have a need for a job.
John Davis, owner of Dowdy's Automotive. John, share with our listeners your locations and how to reach out to you.
Happy to do that. On the web at dowdysauto.com. That's dowdysauto.com. You can also search us on Facebook. We're located at Federal Way and Broadway in Southeast Boise, on Meridian Road just south of Overland by the new Starbucks, and in Ontario, Oregon on Southwest 4th Avenue.
Awesome. John, you've been a great guest. Thanks for coming today. Really appreciate it. We're going to be back with the final segment of the Sandler Training Hour just after this. And welcome to the final segment of the Sandler Training Hour. I'm your host, Jim Stevens. We've been talking to Darby Fizikas about Divine Inventory. The company she works for produces a tool that helps you with people analytics. It gives a snapshot of how someone is likely to perform in a role, or if you have somebody you currently have as an employee and you're looking for a great tool to help coach, mentor them, and develop them to a next level of performance. This is going to give you an indication of some of the combination of attributes they have that could influence their current choices. One of the things I have found in this process, Darby, is that when someone goes through debriefing the assessment, there's this initial response that says, I'm not sure I agree with this, often because they don't quite understand it. But by the end of having it explained and interpreted, they're saying, wow, my life makes so much sense now. And they're seeing in black and white what they have been living out without knowing how to change it. And the beauty of this tool is it gives you a development plan that is crystal clear and very specific. So talk to us about the developmental plans that you offer.
Interestingly enough, people have more and more apt to invest in themselves. And so you may not work for a company that spends a lot of time on development, but that doesn't excuse us from not understanding ourselves and developing ourselves. Back in the 1990s, I used to sell residential real estate, and I used to recommend to my clients that they had their house inspected. So once the house sold, there are no surprises. That's kind of like the job market today. We know that between 80 and 90% of the jobs out there have an assessment that goes along with it. It makes sense to me that if you're looking for a job, you might contact somebody who does assessments and invest some money in yourself and try to understand what these other folks are going to see. So to your point, Jim, if you see somebody that comes back, especially if they're on the job market right now and they're coming back low in some of these critical behaviors or competencies, you or someone like you can help them through the process that we have in the develop report to improve improve on those things. In our develop report, we show not only here are your strengths, and then here are things that are lower. A lower score is not always a weakness. As I mentioned before, if you are an emergency room nurse or doctor, is being low in planning and low in closure is better than being high in planning and high in closure, because the high would make you slower to react. So low is not necessarily a bad thing, but let's just say that there are things that are not where you want them to be, then the develop report will take you through a process and give you a lot of resources so that you can improve. You know, it comes right down to, it's kind of like a sickness. One of the hardest things about somebody being ill is the doctors figuring out what is it and naming it. And once it has a name, once you know what it is, now you can fix it. A person who is unhappy and unfulfilled or difficult to get along with or whatever might be that thing that limits their success, exactly what you said, they look at the report and they go, wow, my life makes so much sense. Now I understand what's been limiting my success. It's named and now they can help fix it.
What kicks in is then the principle of awareness, and just being aware of something helps increase your probability of overcoming that potential roadblock. Have you ever read the book The Goal by Elijah Goldratt?
I have actually.
So I use that to introduce the debrief every time I engage with a client. Because here's what I believe, and in this book, it talks about the theory of constraints, which it's a business novel, and a plant is experiencing low throughput. Raw material in the front door is not turning into completed sellable merchandise out the back door, and a new plant manager is hired to identify the problem and fix it. I believe that the throughput in the human experience is our mental capabilities of connecting the dots and efficiently accomplishing our mission. What the Divine Group tool does, it identifies very specifically the point of constraint, because I can look at the combination of these ingredients. I can see how, let's take for example, I've got a client right now who has a very low ego score. His ego score is 3, yet he's decisive, he's a great negotiator, strong presentation style, a business owner, and that low ego score is causing him to be less of a leader than he's really capable of being. And as I took him through this process, he recognized, you know what, I have, and by the way, a low ego score for us indicates a low self-confidence, but it can also be caused by a high humility. Mm-hmm. So his high humility is not really allowing him to demonstrate leadership by how he lives as clearly as if he could get past that point of constraint. So recognizing that and now focusing his energy, increasing his outward leadership, really creating breakthrough for his company. Your thoughts?
That's fabulous. As you were sharing that, what I was thinking was, what constrains you in your job position 2 years ago could be different than what constrains you today, not just because the economy has changed, but also if you go from being an individual contributor to being in management, or from management into executive leadership, now there are a whole other group of most important things. And ego is one of those things that is critical when it comes to being an effective leader. I'm using the surgeon as an example often today, but if I sat in a surgeon's office and he told me what was wrong and I said, okay, what should we do? And he said, well, you know, not really sure that, what do you think we should do? You know, that is not the time that I want a collaborative decision-making process. I expect a surgeon to tell me what he or she thinks is the best course of action. When it comes to leadership, not always in everyday life, but especially in crisis, people want to know that their leader can make that cut, that precise decision, and that they trust themselves. Because if I don't trust myself as a leader, I can't expect other people to trust me.
Boy, that is so true. Well, Darby, it looks like we're running up against the clock. Wrap up for us and just share globally why you think it's so important a company really take time to analyze their people and give them a path for greatness.
Over the years, we have seen that companies have spent time and energy managing their capital, managing their assets, and I would say in the past 5 years, focus has shifted toward managing their human capital. It's one of the most important and one of the most expensive parts of their company. And when it comes to having happy, very productive, folks in your organization, you can't judge a book by its cover. And you could have people that are really good at hiding the things that are really bothering them or hiding things that they're really good at. And so being able to peek behind the curtain, like the Wizard of Oz, pull back the curtain and see what are these people, what are their innate strengths, and are there things that I need to train to as a leader, and are there things that I have not leveraged. I was talking with a client a couple days ago, and they shared that they had an underperforming driver, a truck driving company, and they were doing assessments. They found out that this gentleman was very low on response to change, and they had him driving several different, you know, all these different routes. Well, when they changed him to the same route every week, doing the same route, he's now a top performer.
Wow.
So sometimes it's just shifts like that that help you increase productivity when you've misdiagnosed someone as an underperformer.
That's a great point and good story to end on. Darby, give your contact information in case somebody would like to reach out to you.
Okay. I can be emailed at darby@divinegroup.com, or you can connect with me on LinkedIn, and that's Darby Fizikas. My last name is F, like Frank, A-Z-E-K-A-S, Darby at the Divine Group.
Thanks, Darby.
Look forward to connecting with you.
Thanks, Darby, so much for being on the show today. And listeners, thank you for listening in. If you have any thoughts, comments, or questions, please feel free to reach out to me at area code 208-429-9275 or on the web at crossroads.sandler.com. Remember, if you measure it, you'll manage it. Have a great weekend. Hi, this is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. Business leaders today know the largest business expense is often labor. However, most leaders fail to see the greatest labor expense is employee turnover as a result of a poor hiring decision. We have a two-hour workshop on Tuesday, March 24th from 2 o'clock p.m. to 4 o'clock p.m. on how to hire and grow your dream team. In this workshop, you will discover strategies to identify and hire the best candidate, benchmark the ideal traits for the position, assure a cultural fit with your company's core value, and harness leading indicators to make sure that you get the results you expect in the first 90 days. Enhance your hiring skills. Invest $89.95 to attend on Tuesday, March 21st, 2 o'clock p.m. to 4 o'clock p.m. at the Sandler Training Center, 704 East Heritage Court, Meridian, Idaho. Register at crossroads.sandler.com or call us at 208-429-9275. Crossroads.sandler.com or 208-429-9275.